This podcast is brought to you by KVH Industries, which creates and delivers the innovations that enable our mobile world. A global leader in mobile connectivity, KVH's groundbreaking, award-winning solutions enable people on leisure boats, yachts, and commercial vessels to stay connected to business, family, and friends using innovative hybrid communications and content. Founded in 1982, the company is based in Middleton, Rhode Island, with research, development, and manufacturing operations in Middleton and sales, service, and engineering offices around the globe. So, Sophia, a small KVH quiz for you.
My favorite kind.
Customers with KVH antennas can enjoy cellular support in how many countries?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to say 150 plus.
Over 150. That is right. As far as 32 plus kilometers from the shore. The KVH Superyacht Group offers white glove concierge service.
If people aren't wearing white gloves, then I'm not interested in the concierge service. That's my rule in life. And I reckon that type of service is available 24/7.
24/7, every day of the year around the globe. KVH Elite, meanwhile, is KVH's premium VSAT service with dedicated bandwidth for HD quality streaming for yachts and charters.
What HD streaming would you be doing this week, Stuart?
Well, I've got to finish Succession.
It's relatively classy for you.
Yeah. and we've been watching something called The Night Agent, which we need to conclude as well. I've got a lot of TV to catch up on. It's been busy these last few weeks.
Well, you need KVH.
Need KVH. Check them out at kvh.com, at Facebook at KVH Yachting and Boating, on Instagram at KVH Yachting, and you can also see them at KVH Yachting and Boating on LinkedIn. On with the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson.
Good afternoon, Stu.
Good afternoon. We're recording on Monday. We're not quite as croaky, I don't think, as last time we did this.
In theory, we're fresh.
should be fresh. Maybe it's a sign of my age that I don't think I've ever felt fresh after the age of 40.
How much of the weekend did you spend in the sunshine drinking rosé?
Very little, actually. But I have a few more freckles have popped up on my face because I did spend a bit of time in the sun. Because it's stunning. The weather's stunning here at the moment, although it's got a bit cold today, hasn't it?
Well, particularly in the office, but I think that's more to do with the office heating system than the weather.
Yeah, it is a bit cold in the office. But outside's lovely, so we're very happy. Everyone's in much better mood in the UK when the sun is shining. But we've had a fair bit of sun lately because you've been in Italy. We've both been in Italy, in fact. So last week, I went over to Venice to the boat show over there. First time at the Venice Boat Show, but I wanted to go and see what it was all about. It's not a superyacht show. There are some larger boats there. The Wally Y150, one of the biggest. So I'll talk about that in a second. But, Venice.
Yeah, where is the show located? Because I've never been.
At the Arsenale. I think it's got bigger this year because I didn't go last year. Katya went last year and she was there again this year and she said it had grown. And it is quite stretched out. It does cover a fair old bit of ground, the Venice Boat Show. And there's quite a lot of boats there. So if you're in the market for kind of a 40 to 60 foot boat, it's a great venue, especially if you're after a boat made in Italy. But it's definitely got potential because there's nothing equivalent really on that side
is
of
it
Italy.
Just Italian builders or is there some representation?
No, Sunseeker were there in force. They had a big old stand, Prestige. A bit of a mix from Europe. So I don't really know what the future holds for the Venice Boat Show. It'd be great to see some more bigger boats there because there's certainly the space. The venue's spectacular. It's at a great time of year. It's in Venice, which is always an amazing place to be. So we'll see. I'm certainly got my fingers crossed for the show because I think it could be bigger and better.
You just want an excuse to go back to Venice?
I do just want an excuse to go back to Venice. Yeah, I just love Venice. God, it's such an amazing place. So I'll talk about the Wally Y150 because that was making its debut there. So this is obviously... The new motor yacht line from Wally Yachts. It's smaller than a Wally Y 200, which many people will have seen at Monaco and Cannes and various places last year, I believe. So we went out on a sea trial with Luca Pisani.
2 years ago.
Was it 2 years ago?
Must have been at the Wally 200 debut.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. So Luca Pisani of Wally fame and legend was there, and he gave us a good tour of the boat, which is always a privilege with Luca. He's a lovely, lovely guy. And, well, he's a genius, frankly, isn't he? So the concept of these Wally Y boats is to pack as much volume into a platform as possible, as is bang on trend, but do it with that kind of quintessential Luca Pisani Wally styling.
They kind of almost started that trend, didn't they, in that, particularly in that kind of size range, or certainly that Wally seemed like a, you know, that hence why it had a front cover, the Wally 200, didn't it?
Because
it was seen as a real kind of game changer in that length to space kind of race.
And it did feel almost catamaran-like, that first boat. It was so beamy. This one, it obviously is smaller, so it doesn't feel quite as large, but it's still a huge amount of space on a boat of that length. So it's just 24 meters, and it's got that, the USP of the larger one was that forward master cabin. So you wake up in bed and you're looking through these, this forward bank of windows, and it's really lovely because you're right at the front of the boat, so you really feel on top of the water. The main saloon set up a bit differently. On this one, it's this kind of double-tiered space. But the way they've arranged the seating is quite nice because you kind of sit there with this amazing panoramic view through these amazing glass doors out over the water. You're looking aft. And I really quite liked it. And then we went out, we didn't hammer it about 25 knots, but we did went out into some Venetian chop beyond the lagoon. And what very limited testing we did was boat seemed very capable. So we'll see. I mean, it's the game we've talked about before, isn't it? Is that how many GTs can you pack into boats of this length? And, you know, we'd like the bigger boat. You'll love the exterior styling or you'll hate it. But there's no arguing about what it gives you. And if you come from the point of view that you spend all your time inside looking out, then it's an absolute winner. She's speaking of the Fretti Group, because obviously the Fretti Group were out in force in Venice. They had a significant presence, and they had one of these cavernous halls in the Arsenale was totally dedicated to the Fretti Group, and had a lovely kind of lounge set up and bar and drinks, etc. But it, all of this came hot on the heels of some big news for the group, because they're now going for another listing in Milan. You'll remember, those of you who follow the news, on the business news on the of the super industry, the Fretti Group IPO'd in Hong Kong last year. The group retains 63.75% of issued shares and is now planning to release 28.75% of common stock in Milan. So it'll be a dual listed company. A statement from the Fretti Group clarified that while Asia remains of strategic importance, the potential dual listing will enable the company to expand its investor base in certain regions such as Europe, the Middle East, and America. So interesting news from the Fretti Group. It'll certainly, well, create more liquidity for them.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are the practical implications of them having it dual listed?
I mean, I'm not sure what the motivations are, apart from what they've said clearly is just to, you know, bring more investors into the firm. And they still hold an awful lot of stock themselves. So if they can basically list another third of the company, raise a huge amount of capital, invest in R&D, new models, get bigger maybe with CRN, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are a group with huge ambitions. And their order book is massive. I think it's 1.5 billion euro order book. So they're not wanting for customers at the moment, the Fretti Group.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about them being publicly listed is that we get their financial results every quarter.
That's right. We do, which is fantastic. Although wading through hundreds and hundreds of pages of financial statements.
I don't think Gabby, our business writer, thinks it's fantastic. Although actually she takes a weird pleasure from a good financial report.
But, it's quite dense language sometimes.
Yeah. It's great for us that then get to read her distilled version.
Yeah, thank God someone else is doing it.
Yeah.
And I should just mention also, whilst we were there, we had a look. There was a Swan press conference, and they kind of launched their new Overshadow, designed by Jarkko Jamson. So this is a follow-up to their the Shadow day boat, which was launched a few years ago, or last year. One of the two. I'm not very good at
All but recently, and time has been lost. Recently. Good.
So yeah, it's a development of the Shadow, which was very much marketed as a tender. The Overshadow is intended to be more a standalone weekender or day boat. So it signals Swan's intentions in the motor yachting sector. They clearly think there's room to grow into motor yachts, and they've packed in a bit more room down below for comfort, and the deck spaces are a bit bigger. So it's a great looking boat, as you'd expect from Jarkko Jamson, who famously designed Pi, the 77-meter Fedship, and has done a lot of work with Axopar. So he is a man with vast experience in this kind of smaller boat space. So the first Overshadow will be in the water in July and will debut at the Cannes Yachting Festival, where we will, of course, take her for a spin. But yeah, nice looking boat. And it was interesting being at the press conference and hearing Giovanni Pamati, the CEO of Swan, saying, the sailing yacht market is a considerable one, but it's just not growing, as we all know, nearly so fast as the motor yachting market. So if they can introduce some of that Swan styling into the motor yachting sector, he thinks there's real, real room for them to maneuver. So it'll be interesting because the Overshadow can be stretched, it can get bigger. They wouldn't say exactly, you know, they wouldn't cast their minds 5 years, 10 years in advance, or at least not publicly anyway. But, you know, this concept could grow to 15, 18, 20 meters. And you could see, you know, you could start seeing quite significant Swan motor yachts, which I think is actually pretty cool because it's such a good brand. So while I was in Venice, you were a wee bit further south.
Yeah, south and opposite coastline.
Yeah. South and west.
South and west, yeah. Yep. Quickly doing the compass in your head. So yeah, I went, which seems strange when you're saying in Italy, I went out to an event which was being hosted by Heesen in collaboration with Luca Dini. So, and actually I was very fortunate. I flew out a night early and was lucky enough to stay with Sarah, who of course is the driving force behind Heesen's PR and marketing and has been for many years. And she lives in this beautiful hamlet called Matate, which is only about 45 minutes from Pisa airport. But it's I think it's only 60 people live there, or certainly only 60 over the winter, I think.
So I've got in my mind this kind of rustic hilltop,
yeah,
clinging
exactly
to the mountainside, I mean, kind of Italian village.
Yeah, it's exactly what you imagine. And it is, it's one of those places where you realise why Italy has the kind of reputation it does and why it's been written about in so many novels and poems and everything over the years, because it just was totally magical. Incredible view. So you can see all the way out to the coastline, but properly high up in the hills. And it was beautiful. We went for a walk with her dogs in the morning and bumped into one of our neighbours and just stopped for coffee. It was the most kind of Italian thing ever. But he was very nice. And then after that, we then drove out. So the event was actually in Forte di Marmi, which is a town on the coast. I don't know if you've ever been there, Stu.
I have. It's amazing, Forte di Marmi, and seeing all the beach clubs. And it's definitely it's a different style of beach holiday, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's nothing like that in the UK.
No,
well, there's no beaches.
No, Bournemouth is quite a different.
No, but even
vibe.
When there is a nice stretch of beach in the UK, it's not kind of partitioned off into these kind of mega beach clubs.
Well, we were there because Luca Dini has opened a studio there. So he's, of course, headquartered in Florence, but he's got a new studio there. So the majority of the event took place there, and it was around Project Venus, which is Heesen's. It's another 55-meter steel displacement series scheduled for delivery in 2025. But Luca actually spoke predominantly about the work that he is doing in Saudi Arabia, in one of the giga projects out there called NEOM that we've obviously worked with quite extensively at Boat. But it was really interesting hearing a bit more about his side of it from her, because he has done all the architectural design for this island, which is going to be called Sindala. And he is very passionate about its future potential as a superyacht destination. So it was really interesting to hear kind of his side of it. I mean, I have to say, whenever I think, I mean, I've done some content around that project, but it is kind of mind-blowing what they're doing out there. Every time you go back and look at it again, and it is actually happening, you know, the latest video, you can see this island being built, and it is slightly, it's amazing and terrifying, I find, in sort of equal measure.
Yeah, scale is, yeah, mind-boggling.
But he spoke about that, and then the rest of the event kind of concentrated around Heeson, and then also particularly Project Venus. So her lovely interior designer from Leucadenia, Sylvia, was there, and she had sort of all the materials that had been chosen and was talking through what they'd gone for. Because, of course, when you're building on spec, I mean, what kind of interior do you go for? Because you, in one way, you can choose anything you want, but at the same time, you've constantly got to keep in mind that you have to find a purchaser for this boat. And she was saying instantly, I think this is the third hull they've worked on, and they've been a bit braver with this one because they feel like they now know that the concept works and they wanted to put something in that stands out a bit more. So it's deliberately got a bit more of a kind of art, almost an Art Deco feel, a bit more playing with kind of lights and darks and a little bit more dramatic. But it was really fascinating to see. I've never seen it at that stage before, kind of the samples and each, you know, you forget how many different materials are used. I know that sounds really stupid, but you forget how many different materials are used on a yacht, and everyone has to be decided and costed and, you know, why you're using that material over a different one. It is a huge kind of puzzle to put together. So it was really interesting to see that at more of a design stage. And of course the yacht is for sale. So scheduled for delivery in 2025, if you're looking for a yacht in the 55 meter range. And after that, we then went down to one of these famous beach clubs and had a wonderful lunch. But I do find Italian lunches, I mean, this is a real super yachting issue. How do you know how many courses you're getting at an Italian lunch?
I always get confused by the primi platti, secondi platti. I don't really know. Sometimes a primi platti can be considered a main course.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And then there's the aperitivo. Is that right?
I mean, it was wonderful. I just sat there and there were sort of endless dishes that kept coming. But it's hard to know at what point, how much you should be eating at each point. Although, having said that, I then went back to Pisa Airport where my flight predictably was delayed. And the Pisa Airport lounge is not somewhere you particularly want to.
I really hate Pisa Airport. I mean, yeah. There was a time a couple of years ago where in the course of a month and a half, I must have been through about five or six times. And just my depths of despair and let's call it what it is, hatred for Pisa Airport only grew and grew and grew. It is a terrible airport. I really wish the city of Pisa would just bulldoze it and build a new one. That would make my life. I know you're not doing it just for me, but, you know, consider my happiness.
That is the kind of sway you have, is, you know, just regularly get places to rebuild airports as demanded by Stuart Campbell.
Please rebuild Pisa Airport.
Start a petition if you'd like.
Might start a crowdfunding campaign. I think everyone in the super yacht industry would contribute to that.
Yeah, true. No one likes Pisa Airport. Anyway, sucked Pisa Airport. So I was very glad at that point that I had eaten all five courses, or a lot of all five courses of lunch. So it was wonderful. And thank you very much to the Heeson team for having me.
Yeah, it sounds like a great trip. You're fascinated by those beach clubs. How do you choose which? There's thousands of them. So how do you choose which one? Are you members of them? I don't really know. I need to spend more time in Fortitude Army. But that would mean having to go through Pisa Airport, so maybe scratch that idea.
Yeah, not until they build you a new airport.
Or fly into Florence.
Campbell will not be seen in Pisa until a new airport has been built for him. Would you like it named after you as well?
That would be...
Or just a terminal, the Stuart Campbell terminal.
Maybe, or a wing.
Okay. It's good to have ambitions.
Yeah. So before our Italy jaunts, I just wanted to touch on the week before I was in Finland to see Swan and Baltic, which I spoke about on a podcast a few weeks ago. I'd never been up to the yards in Pietarsaari in Finland. It's quite a long way from Helsinki. So you land in Helsinki, then you get this kind of like commuter plane to Pietarsaari. It's a couple of hours, an hour and a half, I think, flight, something like that. But you land in Pietarsaari, which feels like it's Twin Peaksian. Like there's no one there. And the airport's tiny, although it's still better than Pisa Airport. And you land, and then you're sitting on the tarmac, and some people stand up to get off, but not everyone stands up to get off. And I couldn't quite figure it out. And Michael from the commercial team, we were traveling together, looks at me and goes, maybe we should be getting off. Because obviously what we didn't realize was that this plane then took off to the next destination, where presumably a bunch more people got off, some people got on. So it was like a bus.
Yeah.
probably took quite a long time to explain that very simple concept that was very strange to me.
Have you ever had that before?
No, I don't think so. No, not like that, no.
A lot of the Caribbean planes do that. They hop through the islands and some people get off and on. I'm surprised you haven't had that.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it was good. So Peter Sari, then we drove up to the one hotel in town, which was full of sailing people. It's people from North Sails there. There were owners commissioning boats because it's the one hotel everyone goes to in this town. And then the next day, we went to both the shipyards. So we saw the new Swan 108, which is not a million miles away from completion. She's a 33 meter and comes from the boards of Germain Frères and Lucio Micheletti, proper blue water yacht. Looks very comfy with very efficient sail handling. They also had the hull, the all carbon hull of the new Swan 128 in build, which will become the second largest Swan in the company's history. She's still a few years away, but it was super cool to be walking through this massive all carbon hull. And then in the afternoon, we went across the Baltic and we got a brief glimpse of the super secret 111 custom project they're working on. I can't say much more than that, but watch out when you see this thing on the water. It is like nothing else I've ever seen. We also had a look around the Baltic 110 custom, which is due to be delivered any day now. Lovely Malcolm McKeon design with those kind of classic McKeon touch of the teak decks that kind of roll over the transom. Actually, in the same shed, it was really cool because Baltic are also refitting the very first boat they ever built, the Baltic 46 Queen Anne. So I tried to get this quite cool photo, but failed miserably to get the oldest Swan and the newest Swan in the same frame. My photography skills.
It's social media larks, harder than you think.
It's way harder than you think. I think this will be easy. This will be an absolute banger photo, but I just could not get it. And then in the evening, we had this very kind of odd experience because the Baltic guys took us on a sauna boat. We went onto a barge, which had two cabins on it. One was a sauna, and then one was like a cabin for eating with a fire in it. It's all wooden boat. So at one point, we're out in the middle of the water, and there was a tender, and he buggered off at one point, and then they lit the fire. And you're on this quite old, all wooden thing. You think, this is not going to take much. But at least we could have just dived into the water. It was very cold though. So you'd have a sauna, get in the water, come back out, get in the sauna, get in the water again, then go have a few beers.
Presumably very light.
Yeah. What, the boat?
No, as in, not the boat by the time it's got a sauna in it. No, presumably very light evening.
It was fantastic.
Almost, yeah, because isn't it coming out for, we're a couple of weeks away from midsummer?
Yeah, so at midnight, you'd look out your hotel room window at midnight and it was...
You weren't still on your sauna boat?
No, not still on the sauna boat. Although apparently I've been told the nights can get very long on that sauna boat, but we had to get up very early the next day to get back to the UK, so we couldn't extend the evening. But yeah, but when you kind of get back to the hotel and you look out and you think this, it's kind of a messes with your head a bit. You think it should be dark, but it's not blazing light, not blazing light, sullen light, I would say. And then the next day I was supposed to get up at the crack of dawn again to go to Heathrow. I did go to Heathrow at the crack of dawn, but then to go and test that, the Icon, which is a collaboration between BMW and tech startup Tide. She's this foiling day boat that looks pretty wild. But IT issues meant my plane was cancelled, so I missed my flight.
Came to the office instead.
But I'm told there'll be other opportunities to take her for a spin soon, which I'll look forward to because, interesting looking thing. It would be remiss if we didn't mention Ocean Talks. So this Thursday in London, that's the 8th of June, it's all happening in Hyde Park at the Serpentine North Gallery. It's free to enter this event and runs from 5 to 8 p.m.
But you do need to have pre-registered.
Yes, you must register. You must register. So you can do that at the Boat International website. Just follow the... follow the instructions on screen, you can register, and we'd love to see you there. So there's some great speakers lined up, including a keynote from Christina Mittermeier, who we interviewed on the podcast not too long ago. She's a marine biologist, activist, and conservation photographer, and a brilliant one. She also co-founded an organization called Sea Legacy. We've got Oliver Steeds, founder of Necton. We'll be talking about the recently launched Ocean Census, as well as the Yachts for Science initiative. And we got some great exhibitors, including acclaimed furniture maker Brody Neal, who repurposed ocean microplastics into furniture, interiors company Nature Squared, A Plastic Planet, Sea Change Wine, and Ocean R, which you might have come across because they make crew clothing and other yacht wear made from recycled plastics. We will, in true BI style, be serving some wonderful drinks. So if you'd like to come along and network with the superyacht industry and hear from some people at the cutting edge of ocean conservation, just head to the website, register, and we'll see you there.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's a slight rework on how it used to be pre-COVID. It used to be the Royal Geographical Society and be a bit more kind of structured and more of a conference. But I'm excited to see this new formula because I think it will allow lots of opportunities for networking and seeing the exhibitors and hearing from people in more relaxed setting.
What's the one thing we always hear at these events?
Not enough chicken wings?
Not enough chicken wings. Well, there's never any chicken wings. That's my first complaint. But it's people, as much as the content is great and we kind of organize our content through blood, sweat and tears, people just love the networking. So this, the concept of this event is we've got a few speakers kind of peppered throughout the day, but really it's about the exhibitors and the networking and milling around and talking. So it's just nice to be doing it in person because we've done this virtually a few years in a row now for obvious reasons. And as fun as, well, it's not fun at all, a virtual event, is it?
No, it's really not fun.
So we're quite keen to get back in people's faces at Ocean Talks.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a good one. And the weather will be lovely.
It is. It is actually meant to be lovely.
Blazing sunshine in Hyde Park. What can go wrong?
It's my husband's birthday this week and it normally always rains. So doubly fortunate. The curse has been lifted.
The curse is lifted. Long may that high pressure system stay sitting over the UK. We love it. We absolutely love it. So we're not doing brokerage picks this week because instead Sophia had the wonderful idea to highlight an article that Nick Jeffrey has written for the website about some of the best classic Fed ships for sale.
I thought this would be up your street, given that every week you basically pick a classic Fed ship for sale. So I thought I'd just do your job for you.
Yeah.
Or Nick's done your job for you.
This is my next 6 weeks of brokerage fix in one. Yeah. Well, actually, at the end of this little section, we should choose which one we would have.
Yeah.
My mind's made up already. So how did Nick come to choose these particular Fed ships?
I think by a mixture of ones that are listed for sale on our...
Being older than 20 years.
I think he just had a look around the market and tried to fit the ones that had the best stories and that were listed for sale on our website and from a spread of different brokerage houses. So should we start with the first one, which was King K, 42 metres, and was delivered in 1981. So she was first launched as Carmack the Sixth.
Yep.
I really should know my Roman numerals by now. The first of three Fed ships built for the same owner. She returned to her home shipyard in 2007 and 2019 for refit work. She came onto the market in March and her broker described her as to appeal to a Fed ship connoisseur and that she is one of the most well-regarded Fed ships of her generation. There you go. You regard yourself as a Fed ship connoisseur, I'm sure, Stuart.
Classic so one, Fed ship connoisseur, yeah.
One for you. She's on the market with Fraser asking $3.5 million.
And she's actually, in price per gross ton terms, she's the best value of our pick. She's just asking €9,000 per gross ton. That's King K, 42 meters. Absolute bargain.
For a Fed ship connoisseur.
Next up, we have A2, 47 meters long, delivered in 1982. She was transformed during an 18-month stint at Pendennis in 2012, which included a 5-meter hull extension, new machinery, and a restyled superstructure. She's had a bit more work done in 2021 and 2022. She's got some new nav equipment, two new Jennies, a host of interior upgrades, and an exterior facelift. She's asking $16.9 million with Edmiston. She's one of the more expensive ones on our list in price per gross ton terms, asking $36,899 per GT. That's A2, 47 meters delivered in 1982.
So next up, we have Iduna, which is 34 meters, and she was delivered in 1939. So she's one of the oldest yachts built by the shipyard, and she remained the largest in the fleet until 1960. She was commissioned by Dutch shipping magnate Philippus van Ommen III. And was the swan song of his boating career. In 1949, she was then sold to a Portuguese nobleman who looked after her for two decades and made various changes, including turning her from a gaff ketch into a Bermudan ketch during a refit in 1960 at De Vries. She was then sold to a consortium of owners in the UK, and in 2000, she underwent a significant restoration project, having fallen into disrepair. She joins the market following yet another extensive refit in 2022, and she's on the market again with Edmiston, asking 3.9 million euros.
So Juno, I love this boat because she was my brokerage pick, I don't know, about a month and a half ago or something like that.
Of course she was.
Of course she was. Yeah, classic boat, built in 1939, 34 meters. And she was, yeah, like you said, she was the Fedship flagship for quite some time. So that's 3.9 million euros. That's 29,323 euros per gross ton. The penultimate Fedship on our list is Synthesis 66. She is 42 meters long and she was built in 1982. She joined the market at the beginning of this year. After a three-year rebuild at Monaco Marine. Her bridge deck now sports a jacuzzi aft, surrounded by sun pads and a space for large groups to dine or party around the bar. Her interior refit was overseen by Bootson, who retained the original woodwork but added a fresh appeal. Synthesis 66 is asking 23 million euros with VAT paid, and that's with Northrop & Johnson. She's the most expensive boat in cost per gross pun terms, 69,486 euros per gross ton.
So last of all, then, we have the lovely Monaco, 38 meters, delivered in 1982 with a stunning Terry Disdale interior. The 37.9 meter yacht was delivered, as I said, in 1982 and then underwent a refit with Pendennis in 2016 when her engines were rebuilt to 0 hours. And she also had a full exterior repaint. Varnished mahogany and cream carpets and huge sofas and plump armchairs reportedly make for convivial living. She's also got a quite an impressive 3,500 nautical mile range, so she is also a go-anywhere classic. And she is for sale with Edmiston asking 5.9 million euros, which puts her at 22,957 euros per gross ton.
Okay, but now the ultimate test. Which one are you taking home?
I don't know. I should have thought about this. I know you would have asked me this. You do your one first.
Well, it's a Juno because, you know, 34 meter, 1939 classic, all the history, beautiful boat. Yeah, really nice looking thing.
I think I might go with Monaco because Terry Disdale interior. It's a classic.
Monaco is a classic. Yeah, it's a great looking boat. Ageless, you know, just looks so pretty and elegant and stately. Take her anywhere. Yeah, really nice boat. And cheaper in gross price per gross ton terms than a Juno.
There we go. Doesn't happen regularly with our brokerage picks.
No. All right, I'm taking the first news story because it's about a catamaran. So let's get on with the news. Polish catamaran specialist Sunreef has announced the launch of its first 23.8 meter 80 Sunreef Eco Power catamaran. Dubbed the world's most advanced electric motor yacht, it is the first in a new generation of eco catamarans to hit the water at the shipyard in Gdansk. This model is equipped with two 360 kilowatt engines and a set of 990 kilowatt hour batteries that, according to the yard, are 30% lighter than the average batteries used. The composite structure has been outfitted with the brand's innovative solar power skin covering up to 200 square meters. This week, the yard also revealed plans for a new 33-metre Explorer Eco model, a trans-Pacific electric catamaran made of aluminium and advanced composites. So this looks really, really cool, this boat. I think I wrote my editor's letter a few issues ago that everyone thinks catamarans are ugly. That's the classic refrain from people. In fact, in the same issue, Eddie Jordan writes in his column that everyone used to think catamarans were, he bangs on about catamarans being ugly. But how the tide is turning.
Finally, the campaign's paying off.
I think that's the traditional thinking around catamarans. I think it's too easy for people to say they're ugly. I think there always have been good-looking ones. Maybe just people haven't been looking hard enough. But I think this new Eco Explorer from Sunreef is one of the better-looking ones. So it's been tailor-made for exploration with a focus on safe, self-sufficient and autonomous cruising to remote locations, but in absolute silence.
So next up, we have that Dutch shipyard Van der Valk has signed two contracts to build a custom 34-metre and 35-metre projects. So they're named Project 111.11 and Project Samba, and they are based on the same hull design as award-winning Lady Lean with naval architecture by long-term collaborator Guido de Groot. So the 111.11, I'm assuming that's how you meant to say it.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah.
111.11. 111.11. I don't know.
I'm going with 111.11. Okay. Van Volk, please feel free to get in touch if that's not correct for future podcasts.
Just address complaints to Sophia.Wilson at boatinternationalmedia.com.
Anyway, she is a full displacement vessel with an Explorer soul. Power comes from twin Volvo Penta 750 horsepower engines, delivering a top speed of 14.4 knots. And significant attention is paid to storage and waste facilities for ocean passengers. Other key features include a sky lounge with an asymmetrical semi-full beam layout to keep the vessel below the 300 GT threshold, and also allow for crew to circulate without entering the saloon. On the other hand, Project Samba is a metre longer and has an extensive focus on outdoor leisure spaces, which include a larger swimming platform. Unlike Project 111.11, the custom model will be built with a full displacement hull powered by twin MAN 1,450 horsepower diesel engines for a top speed of around 17 knots.
Big news from Van der Valk. They're going from strength to strength, fresh off the back of their stellar World Superyacht Award win in Istanbul for Blue Jeans. Good on you, Van der Valk. They build a fantastic boat. I remember when I used to work at a magazine called Motorboat and Yachting some years ago, I always fancied these Van der Valks. At the time, they built these kind of 60 and 70 foot models that to me at the time were massive boats and they look so, so good. So they're stepping up in size and doing it with some aplomb, which is fantastic to see because they really know how to build a good boat, those guys. The last bit of news we have for you is that there has been a whopping €20 million price drop on 95.2-metre Lursen motor yacht Kismet, which has also changed central agency to Cecil Wright and Partners. Built in steel and aluminium and delivered in 2014 to a design by Espen Oino, she has a breathtaking interior by Raymond Langton. Really, really cool interior. I remember seeing those pictures for the first time and being blown away.
Have you been on board her?
I have. Yeah, she's nice. Accommodation is for up to 16 guests across 8 sumptuous staterooms, including a master suite with a private deck, complete with a jacuzzi and access to the yacht's helipad. Cecil Wright pointed out the Kismet is ready to go for the med season and is the largest yacht currently for sale for immediate use. She's now asking €149 million and is lying in Barcelona, Spain. That's €50,000 a gross ton. Good value.
Yeah. I mean, she's been on the market for quite a long time, although not necessarily being actively marketed. So it'll be interesting to see whether this big price reduction generates a surge of interest. Because as it leads quite neatly onto the data this week, we were going to have a quick look at the brokerage numbers from May, which indicate that there were 45 sales, including 3 new builds, but the total value of those sales was €863.2 million, which is, we think, the highest monthly record. So it surpasses December 2022, when the number was €592 million.
So let's just frame that real quick. So that's total value of sales according to list prices.
Asking price, yeah.
Asking prices. So we don't actually know what the final sale price was. But according to asking prices, this was the biggest month, the most valuable month of transactions on record.
Yeah. But that was, of course, there's a strong caveat about this, because when you're obviously looking at brokerage month to month, it's not necessarily a fair indicator because you're dealing with such high value items. Yeah. So the month was obviously massively impacted by the sale of ARPO, the 150-meter Lursen, now called Lady Georgia. She was, of course, sold in-house by Moran Yacht and Ship, which we reported at the time, but she had an asking price of 330 million.
Yeah.
So that, of course, has slightly kind of skewed the figures. But if you do take out this sale, the number still hits at 523 million euros. So it's lower than December, but it's still showing a pretty strong month. There are a couple of other big sales of note, of course, the 75-meter Fedship Arrow, which was listed for sale at 139.9 million. There, the buyers were brought in by Kitson Yachts, and Andrew Bond of Fraser represented the seller. Andrew Bond had a particularly good May, because he was also the buyer broker on Heesen Lucene, which sold reportedly 8 days after being on the market. I'm never sure how truly accurate that is, but she was listed for sale asking $82.2 million. So yeah, a pretty stonking month on paper anyway. But as I say, it's a bit arbitrary to do it month to month.
So that's a huge number. So what was it, 863 million, massively influenced by the asking price of ARPO at 330 million. But it's interesting, while that number's so big, in unit sales term, it wasn't a spectacular month. Mm. So 45 yachts sold on a brokerage market in May 2023. In May 2022, that number was 50. In May 2021, it was 83. May 2020 was a total washout. Obviously, COVID was hitting and the market stalled. 25 yachts changed hands on the brokerage market that month. And May 2019 was 54. So it's kind of a revert to the average-ish for May this year. But a few big ticket items have massively increased the total accumulated value of asking prices.
So yeah, and then elsewhere, so there were 63 new listings that went onto the market, which totaled 805.8 million euros, which gives an average new listing value of about 12.8 million euros. The most expensive of those was Moonlight the Second, which is on the market asking 85 million euros. But we are also, as that kind of kismet story indicates, we are seeing a large number of price drops. We need to do a bit more digging as to how this compares to previous years. But it feels, anecdotally, it certainly feels like more than it has been the past couple of years. So we saw 79 price drops, totaling 52.5 million euros in total. The largest in May, because obviously kismet's sitting in June, was Rocket, which had an 8.7 million euro price drop.
That's the Fedship Rocket, yeah. Chunky old price drop, that 8.7 million euros. Interesting. And that brings us to a close of this week's boat briefing. We thank you very much for tuning in, Sophia.
Pleasure, as always.
Always. We'll both be at Ocean Talks on Thursday, and we hope to see many of you there.
Nowhere near Pisa Airport.
Nowhere near, thank God. sorry, Pisa Airport. I was going to say I love you really, but I really don't. This episode was mixed and produced by Adam Geist or Naomi Wilson, whoever gets to it first. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you next time.